room.
The cheapest watch in the room says it's just a couple of minutes shy of 25 past. I would like us to start. I would like those who need tea or coffee to have so. I see our visitors are very health conscious. No tea, no coffee, or they've already done that early this morning. Or they, I must tell you, this is the most friendly committee. You don't need to have any apprehension. You know from the past, I can speak on good authority. I don't remember you having a bad experience in front of this committee. Always constructive engagement. Somebody's cell phone is kindly reminding us to switch off those. Tell him or her you still love her or him, but you are in a meeting now. I would like to assure you, ma'am, and your delegation from the Film and Publications Board, our main business for the day is you. The two other items that you see are admin issues. So we are going to deal with them. It will take very little of our time. So our concentration, everything, our focus is on you today. So the two items are our admin issues that we just need to sign off on. So we are in your able hands. Welcome. You are very welcome. I'm not, the only thing I'm lacking is exactly as to when you joined the Film and Publications Board. You must be careful, somebody might shake the fence. We're just starting with the welcome. So saying that our main focus is the Film and Publications Board. The item on the agenda with regard to the future is just to inform Parliament that we are not going to deal with it because there are aspects that we need to cover with the department. We need further briefings from the department. And then the other issue is just the adoption of our minutes. So, once again, a very hearty welcome to you and your delegation, ma'am. We are in your able hands.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for affording us this opportunity of presenting our 2008-2009 annual report. I will start by introducing the delegation. My name is Thabo Mpumlwana, the Chairperson of the Board. I bring apologies from the Deputy Chair, Mr. Leslie Sedire. And that is, as you know, that is the sum total of the board members. The delegation comprises as well the CEO, Ms. Yolisa Makasi, sitting here next to me. The COO, Ms. Mapula Makoya, sitting over there. Shared Services Executive, Prudence Kololo, sitting over there. And the CFO, Mr. Jonas Oshogo, acting CFO. And we will explain later why he is acting as our CFO. The CEO will explain further some of the developments at our organization. I think we need to say upfront that we are indeed disappointed with the fact that the Auditor General qualified our audit report in 7 areas and put 1 letter of emphasis. It is a real jump from the clean reports that we have had in the past financial years, and we have put measures to correct those. And the CEO, as well as the management, will put the context and elaborate on that matter. But I think it is important for the board to contextualize our 2008-2009 report so that the members, the honorable members, can understand the context in which we worked in the last financial financial year. The first one is that we were in a financial, in a legal limbo for quite a while, at least in the last 2 years, whilst the amendments were toing and froing in Parliament and then finally signed by the President in the last month or so. So our legislation was not effected for quite a long time. I think the Portfolio Committee will be aware of the challenges that were put by the sector, especially the print media. The board consists of executive and non-executive members, and examiners are seen as executives by the executive authority. In effect, therefore, the board consists of two persons. We had put some proposals for an interim board, and those proposals were not successful because of the transition that we are in, but also the fact that the examiners are seen as executive members and not non-executive. And therefore, the process is in place to actually have the amendment now effected of having a council. The board does have an audit committee, as we can see. It is chaired by Mr. Manya, and so it's a very active audit committee. We have been informed by the executive authority that the council will have been appointed by the end of our financial year. This year, the council, the actual council, will have been appointed. So we assure the portfolio committee that when we come next time around, we will be fully constituted. It is our hope. The general overview of the period is that there was a flux with a change of leadership. We moved from having our CEO, Ms. Mopape, who left, and then we had Mr. Chedi acting. And in the meantime, it took quite a while to also get our current CEO in place, and we got the current CEO and brought stability in December 2008. In the area of the CFO as well, when we restructured, so in 2006-2007, we had a different CFO whose name was Mr. Muku. And then 2007-2008, Ms. Makola was our CFO, and with the restructuring, she became our COO, and we got a new CFO whose name was Mr. Matega, Alpheus Matega, and she has now left the board. We remain with the challenge of retaining staff a lot, and that causes a lot of instability. But we have requested our management to put in place a retention strategy to ensure that we are able to keep our staff to bring stability. Also, we just want to bring to the attention of the portfolio committee a matter that is always on the agenda, that we do receive grant subsidy, but that our grant subsidy, of course, does not match the industry and the societal demands on us. It is important to note that the visibility of film and publication nationally and internationally is increasing, and so are the demands on the organization. We can assure the portfolio committee that we are very good at cooperation with the state institutions and government, especially with security structures, especially as we move towards 2010. The floodgates of the IT sector upon our nation is a challenge to us for a small organization with in areas of video games, of internet communication, of cell phones, and then it puts a lot of exposure on our children, and especially in schools and in the private spaces at home. So it is a new area that we have decided in the next financial year to concentrate on. The other area worth noting is that the societal values are more conservative than some of the criteria we put in place, and from time to time we have to evaluate our classification in line with the values that are permeating our society. We have, in the last financial year, been engaged a lot on outreach work and communication work, resulting in an increase in awareness of SPD work, as well as the increase in the use of our call center. They will explain further. Despite the challenging economic climate, the industry we serve strives to comply with the SPD requirements, and we are very grateful for this. Of course, there is a proliferation of illegal material out there, and that remains a strain on us and a strain on our compliance monitors on the ground, as well as the security sector, especially the police force that have to deal with these matters of having a lot of material on the ground. With those introductory remarks, say, and the House, I would like to call upon our CEO to then present the critical areas or the highlights of our annual report of 2018-2009. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much,
Good morning, Chair, good morning, honorable members, good morning, Deputy Minister. We are going to split the presentation into three. I will be dealing with broadly the performance information report, and the acting CFO will be presenting on the financial, and the COO will be presenting on the some of the remedial action that we are putting in place regarding some of the findings of the AG, and then we'll take questions. My other colleague will also assist in taking up a number of questions. But just to say that the first few slides, I won't give much attention to them because they are really dealing with the issues that we've presented, to the committee about before, which relates to the mandate of the Film and Publication Board. Just really to say here that the mandate that we have put in this slide is the same mandate that is reflected in the Film and Publication Act of 1996, which even though amended currently and signed by the President, you remember the last time we were in the Portfolio Committee, we indicated that the President had not yet signed or enacted the amendments, but subsequently it was done later. The amendments are not yet effected because there are still regulations that are being developed, and it is hoped that the gazetting of the regulations will happen before the end of the financial year. We are quite at an advanced stage working with the legal team from Home Affairs to develop the regulations themselves. So this mandate is still based on the FPB Act 1996 as amended in 1996, and it basically outlines the key functions of the FPB, which is mainly around regulating the creation, production, possession, broadcasting and distribution of films, interactive computer games and certain publications, providing consumer advice, protecting children from exposure to disturbing and harmful materials, as well as making use of children in pornography punishable. Our offices, we basically have three offices countrywide. We have our head office, which is in Gauteng, and we've got another small satellite office, which is in KwaZulu-Natal. This office was opened mainly to assist us with dealing with the proliferation of materials that are not classified in the province, especially mainly your Bollywood and your Nollywood materials. So we've tried to make it easier for distributors to have a point of reference in the province regarding the Film and Publication Board. We have seen lots of improvement ever since the establishment of the office, just in terms of compliance, especially from the Bollywood distributors. However, I think one challenge generally is that they are always asking for discounts regarding the fees that we're charging for classification. We do have an office in the Western Cape. This office in the past has been used extensively to assist with the classification of adult material, because I think more than 70% of the adult material that we deal with, adult material being your pornographic material, comes from the Western Cape province. But we've changed strategy because the people that we have work as examiners, we don't want them to be exposed throughout in classifying pornography. So we also have changed some strategies regarding the kind of classification that happens even in the province itself. In terms of the plans at FPB, I think there were grand plans to expand to all other provinces, but because of financial consideration and financial constraints, we've had to hold those plans and simply focus on at least capacitating these mainly two regional offices so that we can try and spread them to serve other regions or other provinces that are closer. Just on the vision of the FPB, we aspire to be a credible and visible content classification authority. And our highest, our purpose and statement of highest aspiration is to ensure efficient and effective consumer protection through regulation of media content whilst empowering the public, especially children, through robust information sharing. In terms of the strategic objectives, we did come in when we were presenting to the committee, so I'll just go at high level. We have five, in terms of our strategy, which we have five, which we are reporting on in this financial year, we have five key strategic areas. The first one looks really at strengthening our regulatory framework to ensure that we are aligned to the Constitution and that we ensure that we classify and communicate and inform the public regarding that. The second one is about developing and maintaining organizational capacity and capability so that we can ensure effective management and implementation of the Act. And I think one of the things that the board chair just raised about the organizational capacity, which is increasingly coming to challenge us now, is the issue of compliance monitoring of the new media platforms, which is your internet, your cell phone, your computers, because now even computers come already packaged with games, which at this stage we don't are not classified in South Africa. To enhance leadership and management of the Film and Publication Board, resulting in sound corporate governance and compliance, to ensure that the business and work of the FPB reflects contemporary norms and values by forming and maintaining national and international partnerships and coordinating initiatives that support the business of FPB. This is one of the objectives that also we struggle to fulfill, because if you talk about reflecting contemporary norms and values using a classification system, you are not sure at what stage are you reflecting those values and norms. You have examiners, you have guidelines that you advertise for people to make input for members of the public. However, we receive all kinds of complaints from members of the public. You rate a film a 16 or a PG, parental guidance. And then the next thing, one parent will go into the film and phone back, that film was just not appropriate for children. My children were intolerant to the film. The other one goes to the film and says, actually that film was the best film that you can ever have in the classification itself. So the societal values and norms are almost like something that we are chasing every day. And we strive very hard to live up to that. To position the FPB as a visible and credible professional run organization that regulates media through classification of content. Then just in terms of performance information, we have the annual report which has been circulated, but we're just looking at some of the key highlights regarding what we are reporting on. Regarding SO1 or strategic objective number one, which basically has to do with aligning our work and ensuring that it's aligned to the Constitution and that within a sound regulatory framework. Some of the issues that we would like to report on is that, one, as part of our targets, we had planned that we are going to do an overhaul and alignment of our classification system with the amendment bill, because the number of issues that are coming out of the amendment bill need to go directly into the classification system. There's a lot of focus on classification of publications, which is something we haven't done big in the past, but we have classified a few publications, for instance. But the delays regarding the signing of legislation has impacted quite negatively on this target, and it's one of the targets that have been carried to the 09-10 financial year, because by the end of this financial year, the amendments have not yet been signed. Development of the classification guidelines. New guidelines were developed in this reported in this financial year and gazetted for comments and are being implemented. We received more than 50 written submissions from members of the public. And in our own review, we would like to ensure that when we do the review on a biannual basis, that we go out more to members of the public, we do more engagement than just relying on the advert in the Government Gazette regarding the input from members of the public itself, because out of these 50 written submissions, a majority of them are really distributors who are already in the business and who are aware of the guidelines themselves. So we should, when we come back to present in the next financial year, be talking about how we have moved in terms of getting more people to make contributions in activities like this. The third target was to develop and implement an integrated classification system. Even though in number one I've indicated that there were challenges because of the enactment of the amendment, we have gone ahead in terms of working on some of the issues regarding the classification system, because whether the amendments were done or not, we're still required to handle classification. We have upgraded our standard operating procedures and integrated some of the recommendations that were coming from the internal audit. I think there were issues around the security of our classification certificates and quite a number of things that we have looked at. We have developed an electronic reporting database system, which is a real-time kind of, once we've done a classification and finished it, we will be able to at the same time communicate with the distributor the classification information and the certificate. Currently, it takes about 2 to 3 days in order for us to do that. We have not implemented this system yet because of another challenge regarding the appointment of examiners, which I think we'll talk to later when we wrap up. We have also improved our capturing and reporting of classification information. It's linked to the issue I raised earlier on. The other issue target that we had under this strategic objective is to develop capacity and strengthen the compliance monitoring function. In this financial year, 10 additional monitors were appointed. I think when CFO is presenting on the financial report, you will see the jump in terms of the personnel expenditure if you do the comparison with the financial year before the one we are reporting on. This is mainly due to the fact that we added about 10 additional monitors that we appointed, and we developed an off-site mechanism for monitors to access the database. Because when they go, for instance, if they walk into a shop in Cape Town, into, let's say, an adult shop, adult wears in Cape Town, they should be able to take out their laptop and verify that all the films that are displayed, the certificate that's in the film is the real certificate that has been classified. So we have a system of doing that through the off-site access that we have put in place. We have also, I mean, there's other few things that we have done to make the life of monitors easier, like expanding the fleet and etc. I need to say that of these monitors, we've also ensured that there's a balanced spread of monitors even in some of the rural communities where the monitors are based in provinces. But what is important is that in their own programs themselves, they don't focus on the urban areas, because we've picked up a lot of non-compliance and selling of DVDs in particular in rural communities, in shops like your spaza shops. I think one of the raids that were done in Bizana, where they just got like scary stuff really in a shop that looks like a spaza shop that sells milk and sugar. But when they got into the shop and checked under the counters, there were lots of DVDs, mainly your Nollywood and your Bollywood stuff, which is quite big on the market. The other one regarding this objective is to develop and implement a tracking mechanism for compliance monitoring. This has resulted in increased confiscation of unclassified DVDs, increased prosecutions of non-compliant distributors, and increased compliance monitoring activities. We have referred you to graph number 2 for specific statistics regarding this matter. One other quite big area regarding strategic objective number one that takes our attention and our time is the implementation of the program of action on child protection against child pornography. I think we've reported before, or we've briefed the committee before, that there was the national endeavor that was held in June 2008, and there were quite a number of delegates that were drawn from government, NGOs, private sector, and international organizations. There is then a child protection unit that really focuses on outreach and awareness initiatives was set up, and the internet hotline and call center was established. We upgraded our infrastructure a lot regarding child protection, especially because when we come back to report for this current financial year, we have been accepted as a member of an INHOPE, which is an international organization that works with hotlines that are in the same business that you are regarding our hotline. There's a greater collaboration between the FPD and law enforcement agencies. We enjoy lots of support from the law enforcement agencies, and we run workshops for them on an ongoing basis. Again, the statistics as we go through the program will indicate so. In terms of strategic objective number two, one target we had was upgrading the FPD's financial management system and processes. I need to indicate upfront while the CFO is going to do the lots of explaining and on the issue that in the current financial year we could have done better regarding this strategic objective, but there were just organizational challenges that we faced with that at the end led to the resignation of the person who was the CFO. But at least we managed to review some of the finance and supply chain management policies, which then got approved in the current financial year that we are in. We had plans to upgrade our financial system and link it to our payroll system, and in order to close any gaps for interference with information between payroll and finance. But some of those plans did not materialize. They're only materializing in the current financial year. The other target was to review and implement our HR strategy. We've got quite a number of issues that come out from that review that we've done and the implementation. One of them is that we've put in place a wellness program that is targeting all employees, in particular examiners and content analysts, for debriefing and desensitization purposes. For us, wellness is important, especially for examiners, because they are exposed to content that's really not desirable sometimes. Some may enjoy watching pornography, but if you watch it on a daily basis because it's your job, it's no longer about enjoying it because you are doing it as a job. It can also affect you at a personal level, at a psychological level. The same with violence. I mean, we've had cases of examiners. I can't remember this violent movie because examiners don't choose what movie to classify you. We book you for a movie, we don't tell you because it's part of the security that you put in the organization. When you arrive, you discover what you'll be classifying. But people's tolerance levels are different. I remember there's a case that has been reported of one examiner who was crying because there was a very violent movie that she was supposed to classify, but she just felt she did not want to classify a film that is so violent. So that wellness program and desensitization is quite important. Content analysts mainly deal with tracking all reported child pornography images on the internet. So if somebody calls and says there's this image, they have to go and check if the image really exists and activate the police after analyzing the image itself. So they are also exposed to content that on an ongoing basis they need debriefing and desensitization. We have done competency assessments for all managers and executives. And I'm happy to indicate that a majority of people, I think about 70% of the people, were found really to be possessing the required competencies for the work that we are doing at the Film and Publication Board. Along those, there were also still those that were issues that were identified where we may have to work around in further strengthening their capacity, and those have been integrated into their own personal developmental plans in the organization. The other target was to, continuing with the review and implementation of the HR strategy, we have introduced a balanced scorecard as a pilot just in terms of tracking performance in the organization and ensuring that we improve on our performance linked to our own strategic objective and our own targets. One of the things that we want to report on is that it looks like a small figure, but it's not a small figure in terms of rent and sales. About 10% of the staff complement receive bursaries and study assistance. More than 70% of the staff complement have received relevant training in the financial year. We have had 5 resignations. I think, I can't remember the number exactly from my head, but I know the CEO was part of the resignations. Mr. Chetty, who retired, and 2 compliance monitors. We've had 1 disciplinary hearing in the financial year, which led to the HR manager being dismissed. She has further taken the case to the CCMA, and we are still dealing with the case at the moment with CCMA. We have had 1 dispute lodged with CCMA regarding salary adjustments. There was a salary adjustment that was done for a few staff members, but no proper processes were followed regarding the adjustments. And when the adjustments were stopped, when the process was stopped, the staff members, some of them were aggrieved, who had already received the letters from the then acting CEO, Mr. Chetty. The matter was referred to the CCMA by the staff members, and the CCMA, after the FPB appeared at CCMA and explained its case, the CCMA decided that the matter was not within their jurisdiction, and the staff members took it to the Labour Court. I'm not sure how far it is now. I know 1 staff member withdrew, and another one is in the process of withdrawing the case from the Labour Court. We have 1 dismissal that was carried over from the 2007 8 financial year to the 2008-9 financial year. This was a classification manager who was dismissed by the previous CEO based on incompetence and misconduct. And the matter went to the CCMA. The CCMA ruled in his favor. Then the matter was referred to the Labour Court. And we only resolved the matter through a settlement in the current financial year. And that will be reported when we come back to the portfolio committee for the current financial year. With regards to, maybe when you're talking about this, I know it's a matter that should not be reported in this current financial year, but the chairperson did speak to it, the matter of the CFO, Mr. Alfias Matekana. He also resigned in May this financial year, and further went to the CCMA and lodged a dispute on constructive dismissal. So the case has been going on in the CCMA, it's not yet concluded. We hope it will be concluded very soon. Regarding strategic objective number 3, strengthening of leadership abilities and competencies, here one of the things that we have done is to take all new managers and executives and enroll them on a leadership program. This is further supported by a mentorship program that we are implementing in the current financial year. Improve FPB compliance with corporate governance prescripts. Again, here we just indicated that the amendment created some challenges as a result. The council could not be appointed. The current board, there was a finding that the current board is not complying because there is more executives than non-executives who are currently members of the board. And then the issue is of the one the board chair just reported about that is being resolved with the minister and the deputy minister in the Department of Home Affairs. The council charter is also not approved at this stage. In terms of strategic objective number 4, one of our targets was to develop and implement a stakeholder relations strategy. We have developed that and implemented it. We've done. If you look at the annual report, lots of engagement with some of the key stakeholders of the Film and Publication Board, in particular government departments and non-governmental organizations. We've done lots of work with them. We continue to strengthen that work and the law enforcement officers as well. One of the things we targeted to do was to undertake at least 4 research projects in the year in support of our core business objectives. We have gone beyond the 4 research that were targeted. Some of the research that we have produced, working in partnership with credible research organizations out there. We've done a survey on sexually explicit material. We've done a research on interactive games, the effect of interactive games on the behavior of children. There was, when we released the report, I don't know if members saw, there was quite a huge article that was providing the report in the Sunday Times. We also did a research on corporate pedophilia in South Africa. And the annual report also does take the highlight of some of the key findings that are coming out of those reports if members may want to engage more with them. The analysis of media reports on child pornography in South Africa, we've done that one. The study that's currently going now is a study on new media and youth. This is a study that we are doing over 3 years in partnership with UNISA. We've finalized the first leg of the study, which was focusing on urban youth. Now, beginning in January, we are going into the rural communities. We are sampling with young people who are in rural schools and in rural communities, so that we can look at comparatives in terms of how they engage with new media platforms. For instance, already with the urban youth, we know that they watch TV, they prefer to go mix it, they don't prefer SMSs anymore because they think SMSs are expensive. If you want to communicate with them, you will find them on mix it. There's quite a number of issues that are coming out of that study itself, which hopefully will not only help us, but other people who work with young people to plan how to reach out to young people themselves. Regarding the last strategic objective, which is strategic objective number 5, which is mainly about information access, promoting access to information, we have set up a resource center at FPB. It's still very small and it's only serving internally FPB staff, but it's being expanded and linked to university libraries for research purposes, because increasingly we get more and more students, your third year students and master's students in media or law, requiring information around issues that relate to our work. We have intensified media relations, but we're still not happy. We believe we could do more. In the financial year we're reporting on, we were covered in approximately about 250 media platforms. 62% of that coverage was favorable to the FPB. We've also explored other non-traditional platforms, such as your family expos, your sexpo, in terms of reaching out to people. We have also revamped our website. This is mainly really with regards to some of the specific information regarding child protection. In the reporting financially, we've had about 51 online reports on child pornography cases that have been received from members of the public. These have been sent by members of the public using the internet hotline as well as the call center. 9 of these were confirmed as child pornography hosted outside South Africa. At this stage, it was difficult for us to deal with these cases because we did not have any contact in the countries outside South Africa where we could refer. But now, with the membership that we have with InHope, immediately when you get a case that is hosted outside South Africa, we are able to refer it to InHope and to the relevant country, which is in the database of InHope. None of these were hosted in South Africa. There was one case that we referred to the police, which also received some publicity, which was the Soleza. On investigation, it was discovered that the website is not hosted in South Africa, even though there was a South African number that was a house or a place that was in Yeovil, even though there were images of children who looked like South African children, but the website was not hosted in South Africa itself. The police were working on the matter. I don't know how far they've gone. I understand that once the website was closed, and then it came back in another form. But during the search for this year, we noticed again that Soleza, the name Soleza is back, because they had a stand at search for, but when we went further to check whether they could be having any website or whatever, or child-related images, because what they had at search for was real adult stuff, no child pornography-related images. The graph one I've referred to earlier on, this relates to the classification statistics, that this is mainly the DVDs, the the films, which is your theater productions, your movies that go on theater, the theater platform, your games, and your publications that we classify. A majority of these is DVDs, really. I think followed by the theater, your Staking Echo and New Metro, and then the games that we classify. Publications, we are still going quite small on publications, and we expect with the amendments, once they are effected, there's going to be increasingly lots of work that we do regarding classification. If you look at the graph, we have done a comparison between 2007, 2007-8, 2008-9 financial year. If you look at the graph, in terms of films, materials that we classified in 2007, which is the green is movies, the blue is games, in the graph, we've seen a bit of increase in 2007-8 in terms of submissions of movies for classification, and then we recorded quite a significant decrease in 2008-9. When we investigated the reasons, really, when the more we talk with the distributors, they will tell us that it's the effect of new media, the fact that people now can watch films over the internet without having to go through the classification. They can just download and watch the film. So it's affecting business. It's affecting demand from their part. The effect of parallel importing, the people who buy directly from countries outside and simply put the stuff in their shops without necessarily taking them through the relevant channels for classification. The effect of piracy. There's lots of pirated stuff that is doing the rounds in the market. The other issue, really, all these factors have led to a decline, according to the distributors, in demand from consumers. What we need to brief, perhaps we'll come and present this report once it's final again to the committee. We have commissioned a report, a research on a number of issues regarding our distributors. One of them, they've raised a number of concerns regarding the definitions, the packaging of the distributors themselves, because, for instance, the argument of your big distributors like New Metro, they will tell you that you cannot put me in the same category as a video shop that I supply regarding the information or the DVDs themselves. So recategorize the distributors, redefine them, and address them according to their own needs, because our needs are different. The market is quite big. They are complaining a lot about parallel importing. It's affecting their business. One of the things they want the FTB to do is to, when we classify, they've officially requested this, when we receive a movie from a distributor to classify, to please ensure that the person who's submitting the movie verifies or provides the proof of their distribution rights. Now, there's been a big debate on the issue with FTB from our part, saying that our legislation, really, we can be taken to court because our legislation does not give us direct right and responsibility to verify distributors' rights. However, we do understand that we operate within the context of legislation in South Africa that's aimed at ensuring that there's compliance at different levels. So we're doing some work. We don't know what will come out of that work, but it is information that we'll share again. But there are big issues of competition between small players and bigger players in industry. The smaller players prefer to simply go into the internet and order their stuff and get it delivered directly to their shops. And then those who classify submit to FTB for classification, and then the bigger players don't want that because they say they have distributors' rights. Oops! They have distributors' rights in the country that allow them to be the sole distributor of that film or publication. The games themselves, there's a slight increase in terms of the games. The games market seems to be growing slightly, but also we currently have challenges ourselves. I don't know whether we can continue with the.
We have something.
The next slide really deals with the compliance monitoring test. It's the next one after the one I was speaking on. This slide, what we've done, we wanted to show the effect of employing more compliance monitors. And so we've broken down the information according to quarters. Quarter one, we didn't have the compliance monitors yet. Quarter two, we had the compliance monitors, and we see quite a jump in terms of compliance visits. Quarter two, three, and four, quite a jump in terms of the compliance visits that have been made. And registrations have decreased because the link between the visits and the registrations themselves. So we visit not only those that are not registered, we also visit those that are registered, because you must ensure that even though they are registered as the distributors, the content that's in their shops is classified. So you can't say this one is registered, we won't go again. We have to continuously go to confirm that the content that they have. We are working quite closely with the law enforcement agencies that are indicated there. We have some cases that have been opened. One of the things we are trying to put in place, unfortunately, we are unable to report out of these cases how many have been resolved. And we think that is a weakness in our system, and we said we must put a tracking mechanism to at least get our monitors, when they report, they also report on the cases that have been resolved, so that we can be able to say in this quarter we reported 10 cases, out of these two have been resolved or no cases have been resolved. There's been lots of materials that has been confiscated, working with the police, of course. This is your unclassified DVDs mainly, because our legislation empowers us to deal with issues around unclassified materials, not necessarily pirated materials. But if we go on a raid with the police and suspect, we then are able to take out everything, whether it's unclassified, whether it's pirated, and etc., and it's taken. Once you confiscate the material, then goes to the police. The police are supposed to record it and keep a record of the material and destroy it if there is no case against the material. We've had some complaints from some distributors. I know there's a case that we're dealing with in Cape Town of a distributor who material from his shop, it was an adult shop, was confiscated, and he was claiming that he wanted to see what happened to the material. And I think the police said the material was destroyed, but he was claiming that he's seen the material back in the market. We don't know how true is that. But from where we operate, we have other dependencies that we are working with. We have trained law enforcement officers as well regarding our mandate and the work that we are doing with them. Before every raid, we will spend at least about 3 to 4 hours with the law enforcement officers and take them through a brief training regarding the work of the FPB, what we look for, and etc., so that they can assist us independently, even when we are not there, when they see this kind of material, to confiscate it or to call us so that we can confiscate it. We are going strong on training cinema staff, but we having challenges because they are just not available. One of the things that we have picked up is the need for the presence of STD in cinemas. Well, not in person, but maybe through our posters and through training the cinema staff, because some of the challenges that the cinema staff report to us is that you have a parent who comes in and you advise them that this is PG-13, you can't take your 8-year or 9-year old child. They say, no, I'm going to take my child, you can't tell me what to do about my children. But when they come out of that movie, there will be the parents who call and complain that this content of this movie, my children were traumatized, and etc. But there is cooperation that we are putting in place with cinema management regarding how best can we be part of, can we ensure our presence in the cinemas themselves. I think this is the end of my performance information report. I'm going to hand over to the COO, to the CFO acting, who is going to take over on the financial performance report.
Thank you. Thank you, CEO. I'll be taking through the financial performance of FPB for the 2008-09 financial year. In terms of the statement of financial performance, during the 2008-09 financial year, we've got revenue to the total amount of 45 million,
The revenue was made of the government grant subsidy of 33.5 that was received during the financial year. And then during the previous financial year, we only got a government grant of 19.2. And also the regulation fees, we have been able to collect the regulation fees of 10.2. That has declined as compared to last year, where we've been able to collect 12 million in terms of regulation fees. And we also collected other income basically from interest from the amounts that we invest through fixed term with the bank of 1.5. In terms of our expenditure is made of personal expenditure and operating expenditure. You'll see that the personal expenditure during the 2008-09 financial year has drastically increased. That was also due to the implementation of the new structure and also employing additional 10 new monitors. During the 2008-09 financial year, FPB recorded a subsequent deficit of 8.2. And even in the previous financial year, we recorded a deficit of 2.1. In terms of our income analysis, majority of our income comes from the government grant subsidy and regulation fees. As you can see, during the past three financial year, 2008, the regulation fees has increased and they have declined during the 2008-09 financial year. And in terms of our expenditure analysis, you'll see that during the past 3 years. In 2006-07, we recorded a surplus. In 2007-08, we recorded a deficit, and also it was followed in the next financial year, 2008-09. Also, we recorded another deficit. Our expenditure. You see, the personal expenditure has gone up as compared to the previous two financial years, and so is the operating expenditure. In terms of our statement of financial position, that is our balance sheet. We have fixed assets to the value of 5.8. The categories of the assets, I think, they are clearly articulated in the annual report on note 2, if I'm not mistaken. But it basically comprises the computer equipment, the office equipment, the furniture, and also some computer software that we use in the organization. And in terms of our equity and reserves, you'll see that our reserves have practically gone down. That was due to the fact that we've been accumulating deficits during the past two financial years that led to the reserves going down. And during the 2008 financial year, our total liabilities, we had 8.4 total liabilities, as compared to the previous financial year, where we only had 5.5 in terms of our current liabilities. In terms of our cash flow during the financial year, we've been able to collect 41 million out of the 41 million, also that's one we have also collected from debtors of previous financial year. So the total that we collected in the actually collected was 41.1, and then the previous financial only collected 30 million. And then out of pocket collect, we actually spend more than what we actually collected, because we spend 43 million from retail for operation cost and also personal expenditure. And we also paid 493 for our finance leases. So at the end of the financial year, we only had 1 million as cash at hand during the end of financial year. As compared to the previous financial year, and we had 5.4 million. Reasons that led to the Auditor General actually qualifying the payment publication about the financial statement was it was due to assets with no book value, which FPB are still using. So their useful life were not adjusted, and also their cost was not adjusted. The second issue that led to qualification was the inaccurate financial reporting on finance leases. This basically came from the previous financial year where we leased computer equipment, that's the laptops and then the desktops, and they were saying that the initial recognition of the cost was wrong from the previous financial year, though it was audited in that financial year. The third one related to irregular expenditure. This basically, it was as a result of appropriate individuals not signing the purchase orders as required by Union Parking Board policies and also PPMA and Treasury regulations. And the last one was calculations of the cash flow. That's where we had a disagreement in terms of our workings and also their workings. So they said our workings were wrong. Can I pass over to you?
Thank you, and good morning, honorable members. The issue of a qualified audit report is viewed very seriously by the FCB management. We have established a dedicated committee to oversee the resolution of all audit queries, and this committee reports on a regular basis to the Executive Committee and the Audit Committee. We have also ensured that no performance bonuses are paid for the year 08-09 due to the obvious non-performance of the organization. We've developed a management action plan to resolve all identified queries and any other weaknesses that may be identified through other systems and processes. We've ensured that we strengthen capacity in all key areas, in particular HR, procurement, and finance, because that's where most of the weaknesses were identified. We've filled in all vacant posts in those identified units with adequately skilled individuals. We've also ensured that all finance staff undergo training because a major area that was identified was the weakness in the disclosure in line with accounting standards and applicable legislation such as PFMA and Treasury regulations. The weaknesses in the procurement processes were also identified, and we've developed policies because there were major policy gaps that were identified in our system. So we've plugged those gaps, and we are happy to report that the revised supply chain management policy has just been approved by our board and is currently being workshopped with staff and will be implemented now in November. We've developed a tracking mechanism for non-compliance, especially in the procurement unit, throughout the year so that we can have timeous reporting of irregular expenditure, because part of the reason was that the irregular expenditure was not disclosed during the year. So we've ensured that we put in mechanisms in place to track any non-compliance and report it timeously to the relevant authorities. We are currently overhauling our whole, our entire asset management system, and we've improved staff awareness on internal policies and all applicable legislation. We've also identified all gaps in the existing policies, and we've developed an action plan to develop new policies with deadlines. I think by end of December this year, all identified policies would have been developed and aligned with applicable legislation. We've increased our internal audit activity to ensure that any other gaps or any of our systems that are not compliant with audit requirements are addressed or identified by internal audit. And the balance scorecard process is really assisting us in ensuring that performance information is accurately and timeously reported with evidence that is required for audit purposes. Thank you.
Thank you. There's only one voice in your delegation. We have not heard. So I'm not sure if she's Chairperson, we thank you and your delegation for the report. Before I avail the opportunity to members to pose questions and make comments, in your contribution, you made mention that the Chief Financial Officer, due to organizational challenges, resigned. It's a very broad statement, which is open to all sorts of interpretations. Rather that we speak very plainly, state what happened, instead of using parables that can be interpreted in all sorts of manner, so that we know exactly what happened and can move forward.
Thank you, Chair. I'm absolutely able to address that one. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think really the reason for him to resign, my take is that it's due to incompetence. I started at FPB in December last year, which was on the last month of the third quarter. And since then, there's been a trail of incorrect reports presented to the board, presented to the audit committee, presented to the executive committee, and one of those reasons why we ended up being on a deficit, because every time we asked in terms of reports, how are we doing in terms of expenditure, we're told that we are underspending, and the reports themselves indicated that we are underspending, and so there was a high level of incompetence, and the reports, I think there's quite a number of reports that were also sent by the audit committee, because you know that the CFO has also a very close working relationship with the audit committee, but I can remember reports about two or three quarters sent by the audit committee to the board, which were raising the issue of the capacity of the CFO, which was basically incompetent. But what is happening in the system currently is that he has lodged a dispute that we caused unacceptable. I don't know. The environment was no longer conducive for him to work. But the key witness, one of the arguments we're putting forward, is that he left because he couldn't cope with his job anymore and he was incompetent. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. So to put it kindly, the gentleman left because of the weight of his office became too heavy to bear. Members, your opportunity for comment, question, honorable.
thank you, Chairperson. welcome the presentation, the annual report of the FPB, and I think it's one of the honest reports that helps us to what engaging as a portfolio committee to be in a better position to interact not only on the basis of what we've received and read, but also to other personal and more, you know, in a position of strength being involved in the organization. I think you'll be very honest and open to us. Then it does help us, you know, to do our work better as an oversight, as part of an oversight responsibility. But having said that, the four areas of emphasis by the Auditor General, there's one major concern on the issue of cash utilized from operating activities and financing activities. Despite the fact that on the first point, which is the property, plant and equipment, where you look at the accounting practices, compliance, issues of, you know, irregular expenditure also highlighted as part of this. This seems to be a trend in our entities. I'm not sure why we should be subjected to this kind of behavior as such. But I think the trend is that it is reported, you then act, and in the next time, these issues are reported and then people act. I'm not sure, because with your organization, with FPB, it is the first time that you have this qualification. Obviously, citing the previous audit report, which is rather different from this one. And I heard what you said on the corrective measures, which I also recognize. But I think, Chairperson, it is of a great concern that an organization like this one would be subjected to this kind of, you know, too much discrepancies. So I think one of the issues which I would like to end off by saying that the HR issues also with us seem to be, there seems to be a serious discontent or dislike of some of the measures taken to discipline them, and they end up taking these to the CCMA and the Labour Court as such. So I would like to get the feeling of the board, especially the chairperson this year, as to how are you going to ensure that in future these issues are managed and then resolved within, without having to go further, even though you cannot prevent that where the situation necessitates. Because I also see the HR manager was dismissed, but it's not clear why the person was dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Member, Comrade Mantush. Mantush.
Mantush. Thank you, Chair. I'll raise it, even though perhaps it's been touched upon by the previous member, because that's what went through my head too, and I noted it. That when it comes to things like irregular expenditure, inaccurate calculations on the cash flow and all that, one really listens and then wonders why these things are not recognized early until the damage is done. And that damage would have been done over, I don't know, a period of time. Maybe 1 year, 5 years, I don't know. But then it's only after this damage has been really done, then you know that some matters, were told them that matters will now be put in place, you know, to prevent. You know, I'm really talking about why is it happening like that? You know, I think in most things we like to see that there's prevention rather than disease and then cure. That is a failure. You know, it means that the system is failing. Thank you.
Dr. Lituli, thank you very much for the plea for early diagnosis. Honorable Mayor Maduna Peterson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you once more for the presentation. I've got just two simple questions, actually. The first one being, what monitoring and evaluation tools does this film and publication board use to determine the effectiveness of the implementation of the program of action on child protection against pornography, especially in the rural areas? And the second question, how is the relationship like between yourselves and the police? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Shall we pause at this juncture for a rejoinder?
Put some introductory remarks, then the staff will put the details. The first one is that we are equally concerned about the areas of emphasis that we got this time around. And I think we should say that what we have, as the board in particular, and the audit committee, we have had a meeting where we said we'll actually work very closer, even at a point where we're even more operational, the things that usually as a board try to keep a distance as much as possible. But we've come to a conclusion that we'll work a little closer in this particular financial aid to ensure that the systems are put in place. The question, there's another general question on the CCMA is that I don't think it is an area that can be eradicated from any organization, especially when you try to tighten your systems and you make people accountable. Then the people feel the pressure and they will either leave willingly and see their deficiencies, or they will then go to the CCMA. But we will try as much as possible to avoid it, but I don't think we can make a guarantee here that the staff who have a right to go and appeal to the CCMA can be stopped from doing so. But the internal systems of control are paramount to us as the female part. Maybe the question on the HR manager is actually the same as the one of the chief finance officer. Although as the board we're not involved in interviewing staff and so on, once the reports come to you and you see that there's something not right here, you throw it back and another one comes and you throw it back and you see some gaps. And the CEO, and unfortunately, as I said, in the past financial year, the CEO we had before left and we had an interim CEO. I think those who were in the portfolio committee before, they know the challenges we had with the person who was acting. So that created a gap for some of these measures to be put in place. And so for precisely the same reason, she went through a disciplinary and the disciplinary found against her. And she left the organization and then went to the CCMA. So there's nothing that we could have done to retain her. In fact, it would have been worse for the organization to have retained her in terms of putting corrective measures in our HR systems and policies. But I'll ask the CEO and the chief services executive. Thank you.
Okay. I'll start by allocating the questions. I think there was a concern around the too much discrepancies, especially on the fourth item, the immaturity contribution. I don't know if you want to, I think you should give further details, CFO, regarding that. And then regarding the HR issues, how are we ensuring that we move out of the challenges that we have now, and specifically the case of the HR manager, I'd like to invite the SSE to speak on that because she was handling the issue. The M&E tools that we have in place, COO, and the relationship between ourselves and the police, COO, irregular expenditure, I think the CFO can speak on the issue. But I think in the spirit of honesty, one of the greatest challenges that happened with regards to this irregular expenditure, especially if you look, there's three categories of the irregular expenditures that are reported here. One relates to expenditure requisition forms that were not signed by certain delegated officials. One relates to where there were no three quotations that were attached to a requisition. I think the third one relates to the wrong processes of appointing consultants. The third one that relates to the wrong processes of appointing consultants, it's really, we acknowledge it from our part as FPB when we had discussions with the AG that we didn't know. And unfortunately, it's at the time when we didn't have a supply chain manager. But this has since been corrected, because when you appoint consultants, you have to advertise. It doesn't matter if you have people on the database, but you have to advertise widely and firstly start with the government bulletin before you could do anything. So now we do those advertisements for whatever consultant services that you require in the organization. The first one regarding the signatories, what happened was that before any audit, I think a number of departments would go back to their files and identify where there may be discrepancies, not like the outstanding signature or whatever, and sign those things. But for some miraculous reason for the AG, they got the information before it was corrected. Again, we don't want to be suspicious that there's somebody who took information and gave to the auditors, because we don't have proof that somebody did that. However, it was just miraculous for them that they got the whole pack, as it was on the way to the people who were supposed to clean it up, they got the whole pack. And if you allow me, Chairperson, it's one of those most helpful things. I don't even want to go into detail about the issue itself, but we believe that we could have avoided that element of expenditure. But in moving forward, we have issued very strict instructions in finance that it doesn't matter how urgent the payment is. We don't do a payment unless all signatures have signed, unless we ensure that there are quotations, there is an approved submission. So this is some of the systems we've put in place. Before an expenditure, there must be an approved submission attached with the quotations and everything, and all signatures must sign according to the delegations of the organization before we actually pay. If one signature is outstanding, we will not pay and say we'll correct it later, because we were caught wanting when we wanted to correct things later. I think the second one relating to the absence of three quotations, I think it really related to weaknesses of internal controls in the organization, because there were delegated responsibilities at different levels in the organization, and there was no centralization of the procurement function. One of the things we've done now is to centralize the procurement function. So if anybody needs to do something, requires quotations, I don't go and look for quotations, but the supply chain management unit does look for quotations on my behalf as the project manager, because you also want to avoid the interaction between project managers and directly with suppliers, because that can lead to other challenges for the organization of inflating prices and fraud, etc. We could have done it earlier, we could have chored it earlier, we agree, but we feel now that beyond choring, we are putting systems in place that will, over time, hopefully ensure that we move from the situation that we are in. The last issue I wanted to speak on was really regarding the CCMEA issues. We've debated the issue a lot at the level of the organization, and it's really one of those issues. I don't know how we're going to avoid the CMA cases, because now one of the cases that it's probably going to go to the CCMA, I'm not sure, is the issue of the performance bonuses themselves, because the organization has taken a decision not to pay performance bonuses because we've not performed as an organization, we have a deficit, we have a qualified audit report, but also the policy says that organization must perform exceptionally before you pay performance bonuses. And but already people are saying in the past, there's never been scrutiny regarding the issue of performance bonuses. You know, there's lots of issues with the union regarding that issue. We are in negotiations with the union because we really want to avoid the issue going to the CCMA again. But I don't know if we'll really be able to avoid it going to the CCMA. But we are quite sensitive to the fact that we don't want to take cases to CCMA, because also it's taking lots of resources from the organization, because you must get legal representations. You must also spend so much time. Myself, I've spent about 5 days now with the CMA being a key witness on the case of the former CFO, and it's taking so much time of the organization itself. But sometimes workers know their rights, and they try very hard to ensure that they exhaust all options that are presented to them regarding exercising their own rights. But I don't know, colleagues, if you want to. I think I want to invite you students to start first on the issue of the
Thank you, members. The HR manager was actually dismissed for a number of charges. The first one was gross misconduct and fraud. She actually falsified a spreadsheet on performance bonuses where she allocated herself a bonus payment even though she did not qualify. We had had discussions as management, and we had discussed the issue that she did not qualify for a performance bonus, and yet she went ahead and she allocated it. So unfortunately, we picked that and we rectified it. The second issue was she prepared a submission where she was motivating for her salary adjustment and three other staff members without following proper processes. She was actually the custodian of HR policies and systems, so she was supposed to understand processes better. But then she went ahead and she prepared that submission, and we did not process it. So she took that case to the CMA, and the CCMA did not have jurisdiction over the matter, so it was referred to the Labour Court. But some people withdrew. I think we only have one person who is still considering withdrawing the case with the Labour Court. And then she also took unauthorized leave for about 4 days. So, I mean, those counts are, I mean, they just show that she was not competent enough to manage that portfolio. So that's basically what happened.
Regarding the issue of the cash flow that led to the qualification, that was because during the financial year there was no quarterly or mid-year financial statements which were prepared. So as a result of that, it was just a matter of a last minute thing, waiting for the financial year to end and then prepare the financial statement. And another thing was that during the financial year there was no active intern audit, because the intern auditors also resigned around June, July last year, and then the recent intern auditors were only appointed around December. So there was just a lot on their plate to can do it in that regard. But during this financial year, we prepare quarterly financial statements which are presented to both the audit committee and the board on a quarterly basis. And the internal auditors are tasked to review those financial statements. So if there are any deficiencies, so we have to correct that in time, not wait for the financial year and for the AG to come. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Okay. On the issue of the performance monitoring and evaluation tools that we've got on our program, for the reports that we receive on the internet hotline and on the call center, we have standard operating procedures and performance standards and turnaround times that we've set, and obviously we get the monthly and quarterly reports that are reviewed and corrective measures are implemented. In terms of the awareness programs, we don't have a formal evaluation process, but we do get informal feedback from our various stakeholders, and we engage on a regular basis with NGOs and other government departments just to check how we are doing. We are looking at implementing a formal evaluation mechanism in the new financial year, but at the moment it's mainly informal feedback and reports that we get. On the reports, I mean our relationship with the police, I think we have a very good relationship with the police. They are really very cooperative. Whenever we engage with them, they really work with us. Whenever we call them for our workshops, for child protection reports that we report to them, and all other relevant issues. We've recently actually had an engagement with them and where we've agreed that we'll be developing a manual just to inform some of the processes and the protocols to agree on how we handle certain cases. They've indicated obviously that they've got their own manuals, but they are willing to look at our manual that we are developing to see how it can improve their processes. And the issue of the MOU that's long outstanding with the police that we have been discussing, they are also now again started re-engaging on the matter because the matter had been at a standstill for a while. So I can say we have a very good and cooperative relationship with the police.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Before I avail the opportunity to meet Honorable Member Goa, I would like to welcome Ms. Panameru. Mr. Blanche, rather. Mr. Blanche, you are welcome. We did get your apology that you are sick. I'm surprised to see you here today. This is why I'm re-christening you from the mayor. I wasn't expecting Mr. Blanche. But nevertheless, welcome. We hope you speedy recovery. Ma'am?
No, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the information, the presentations. You know, some of these mistakes in the, that you make, and this qualification, I don't know why we make them, because they are as old as Humpty Dumpty sitting on the wall. Everybody knows that you must sign, all these things that we do. I think that really nobody is expected to do them. And now you become very popular customers of CCMA. Why that? I mean, those are the things that, and I really work, only that working normal circumstances can be avoidable. And if you say you are not going to, you've just on welder, I don't know if I heard well, you've already decided that you're not going to give what is it, performance that? I don't know that thing because now I never get it. How do you do that? You want to tell me that your staff is the same? Because you must go through this performance first before you do. That means, in any case, you just give all the time, whether you don't go through, just give these bonuses without going through this. Now, and the problem, I appreciate like a program here, and how this monitoring, I like this thing of this monitoring in this. We've tried it before, we've tried it for many times, but I think Nati, as a portfolio committee, we should assist you if you empower us on this monitoring, because together with this monitoring, we have got this thing now which is coming up very fast of this human trafficking. I know it's not your competence, it's not your, but it's affecting everybody, and it's mainly performed and organized in these shops, the very same shops that sell these pornography things, because they first show them these pornographies and so forth when they recruit them and group them to these units that they're going to be selling them to, whatever thing. So that's one of the things that I like in your program. So, Chairperson, I think that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. I must just say that, Mayor Kowa, you will not be au fait or familiar with the concept of performance bonus, because members of parliament are not viewed as employees. This is why you don't have a union. So you always fall between the cracks. You also don't have an employer that you can point. It's an institution, parliament. So I can sympathize with you I do remember about 2 years ago when we had the famous or notorious, depending how you look at it, Judge Museneke, when members tried to motivate for a 13th check, what's it called, bonus, yeah, bonus check or whatever, and the good judge said that you as members of parliament, if you persist with this concept of a 13th check, we can organize it, and members got very excited. But they didn't hear the complete version of what the judge said. The judge then went on to say that from the beginning of the year, we can deduct each month from your salary so that at the end of the year, you can get the 13th check. So I would really understand when Mekawa says that this performance bonus is. But before giving over to Advocate Madasa, I would say that you are on the correct side in regard to the issue of performance bonuses. You have to do the right thing by the organizations. So if you end up at the CCMA for the right reasons for upholding the correct principles, so be it. And if there was bad practice or malpractice in the past where people were just given these bonuses even when they were not deserving, a time comes when one has to take responsibility for an organization and do the correct thing by the organization. It's not always an easy process. It's easier to cut ribbons and dish out cakes than stand for principle and become unpopular for the right thing. But we have to do the right thing. Advocate Madas.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. In my view, I think we're dealing with a very serious topic, the one that we're dealing with. Because it pertains to the future of this country in terms of social coherence and other things. So I think I'm not saying other people are not taking it seriously. I'm just emphasizing that point, that this is a very serious matter. So therefore, that's why I welcome the presentation. And I agree with other comments that we need to work together to deal with this scourge. I have four issues to raise. One, follow up on this person who has disappeared. Now, I heard that he was highly incompetent. That answer is very worrying to me, because if he was highly incompetent, I'm wondering, how did he find his way to the job? Mm-hmm. Get the point. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to belabor that. Second issue is, on the slide, 5.4 performance highlights, SO4, I take it is strategic objective number 4. Forgive me, I'm new in this work, so... I don't understand all these things. But here it is said the target is to develop and implement a stakeholder relations strategy. Now, for me, in this thing we're dealing with here, this is the key issue. Because it's fine to have regulations. I always say as a lawyer to people that law always comes after the effect. Many people put too much reliance on the law. The law does not prevent things. Normally comes after the damage. Therefore, I think the issue of stakeholders agreements for me is the most important preventative strategy. And I appeal that more emphasis should be put on this, with a view to have tangible agreements, outcomes. You know, we talk of summits, then there's a summit conclusion or resolution. here I think we need to have a tangible outcome that we together as a committee and you can measure whether these people are living up to the agreement. Concrete outcome. Because some of the stakeholders who have an interest in this illegal distribution are powerful. I mean, how do you really prevent this thing against such powerful institutions that are making money out of these things and are powerful? Money is power. Now, we as the government, state, were busy preventing at the end, making laws, but these people are pouring all the time. It's like we're running on one spot. So my view is that emphasis should be put on the stakeholders' responsibility. They have a social responsibility, and we need to put pressure together on them to play their role. I listened on the other day on the radio some weeks ago. This very matter was under discussion by chance, and I realized that a lot of pressure was put on the callers who were objecting to this kind of material, and the pressure was that the parents must take responsibility. These people who are guilty, they're making this point of the parents. And for me, that is a partial truth. But if you do a proper objective analysis of social society in South Africa, where are those parents? You have child-headed homes, you have single-parent-headed homes, which means they don't have time for sufficient time for the children. That is the objective truth. Now, this so-called parent responsibility, how is it going to be effective given our objective reality? So this is why I'm saying these people, if the parents have responsibility, they too have responsibility. They are citizens, and they have power, they have the money, and they are putting pressure on the state. So they must take responsibility. So I'm emphasizing this issue because for me, it's a key preventative strategy to deal with this. I know it's not easy, but we have to collectively deal with it. And then the last issue is, I don't know whether it falls under the purview of XPB, is the issue of public advert. Is it under your responsibility? Yeah, that is billboards and so on. The kind of material there is not your.
No.
But I mean, if it's material that is problematic to the children, if I'm driving around with my 2-year-old or 3 or 4 or 5 6 7 and here is a naked picture, a huge billboard. I mean, kids are watching this thing every day, going to school, past this billboard. And it's unrestrained public material. I don't know if this is out of your thing, it's okay, but I view it as problematic in the protection of the children. It's even more aggressive in my view when it's like that. But you will guide me in your answer where this falls. Thank you very much.
Advocate Matata, the last time we were at law school, we could both count. You said you had 4 points. You made three. Honorable Kitch.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think on page 24 of the annual report, one would like to get clarity on the resignation, because there are 5 resignations on page 24, including the resignation of the CEO. And I think this is viewed negative to the effect, is negative to the, I'm sure it is negative to your performance as an organization, because you cannot have so many resignations of our Kiwi officers and whatever in your organization. But what might be the reason of so many people resigning?
Thank you, Honorable Member. Let me take somebody, your hand, maybe? I'll take you, honorable member. Let me start with those who have not yet spoken.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 39 of the annual report, it is reported that there are 6 cases of child pornography. I'd like to know the progress of those cases. And again, on page 42 of the same report, what were the reasons for refusing 10 adult shops of registration for the STDs? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Khachibon. Honorable Message.
Thank you, Message. I must say I'm quite happy with the response from the FPP officials and the chairperson. The issues that I've actually missed out, there is a hotline which has been established, which is internet as well as the call center. I would like to know the volume of calls that you receive and the nature of that call. And also how long has this been established? The other issue is the deficit which is acknowledged and recognized in the in the report, both for 08 and 09, which is 2007-08 and 2008-09 financial year. How are we going to manage this properly so that we avert such reporting coming forward again? So that is one of the challenges which I think you would be confronted with going forward. And the other questions, Chairperson, I will not really go to because they have been addressed. Like your two people who have been working as CFOs, both the former and the acting, who were by your own admission, both of them were incompetent. How the process was followed to appoint them, and whether or not when we appoint the new one, the same process will be followed, and then the next time you come here, you say this one was incompetent again. So that is very important as ethos and values of a good government going forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable member. I've noted you, Dr. Lutuli, before that. Ma'am Balinder. You are welcome. Your silence is very loud today. Dr. Lutuli.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'm new also in this committee. I hope what I'm saying is relevant. You know, when I was in the veterans thing that was going on here in Parliament, and I think Mom Gwana Obekot, we worried a lot about the, you know, the films and the, things like all that is shown there. And because we want to create a new society, these are seen by our children, the value systems and everything. And people have already talked here about, if you say parents must really take care of their children, there are many reasons why that is really not, it's not good enough. They are working and all sorts of reasons. But we worried and we really didn't know what to do. We would discuss and not know exactly where to take this to. Now, I'm just wondering if this, in fact, is the right place for that. Because to me, I wonder why, for instance, in the first place, we've got to show this stuff. We've got to show this stuff of wrong films, which are not really good value films, they're not helping our children at all. And then say, no, the parents must control, and they're not there. Why do we have to show these things on television or cinemas or wherever? Because I look also and see what, for instance, you see perhaps in other countries, you know, what they show there, you know, the children. But here, in this country, we seem to be particularly fond, for instance, of violence. violence all the time. Even ordinary adverts, you know, which would be shown time and again, before you know what, the advert turns violent. So I'm wondering whether this film and this organization up here, is it not where all these things should be stopped? I know there used to be censorship, and I think maybe we're liberal now, no censorship and whatnot. But if we see the results are not good for the country that we want to create, why not? Why allow them to go on? You know, if they must be censored, can they be censored? I think you get the idea of what I'm saying there. Why can we not really stop these useless films which make, you know, if you notice, for instance, even girls are maturing early. You know, they are reaching, I'm speaking now as a medical person, they reach puberty early, earlier than they used to. And one of the reasons is really the effect of films and television, what they see all the time and stimulates their. So I just stop there. I think the general trend of what I'm saying is understood. Thank you.
Good folks. There are obviously the more direct questions pertaining to the report before us. And there are obviously a second category of issues that are more general, where members also preface their input and say that they are new to the work that you do. So it's in that context that you have to bear with some of the more broadly phrased questions as to why there's the board and the various agencies, why you have people who are actually appraised the material before the general distribution. So I plead for your indulgence. Some of the questions, you might hear them often, but they are obviously of concern to those who are just recently interacting with your responsibilities. So I'm appealing to the broad context. But Dr. Lutuli, you also did not help us in your introduction when you said that, quote, when you and Mayor Paul, you served on this veterans thing. Now we don't know what this veterans thing is. If this is how you characterize it, the people listening to you, at least if you gave them context, what's the proper name of this body? But if you are not seen to be taking it serious, how will they take it serious?
I take the point.
Yes.
Thank you,
ma'am. Over to you, good folks.
And if I may just comment on three things. We have discussed this thing of the resignation, both the resignations as well as those who were dismissed. Some of the people resigned because of better career opportunities elsewhere. For example, the previous CEO, you couldn't stop it. Those who were dismissed, we've discussed that the management must put up a proper recruitment strategy. Because you can't have a high turnover of CFOs, for example. It's not so much that those people were incompetent, it's that the organization is incompetent in its recruitment. You can't on two occasions recruit CFOs who are incompetent. You can't recruit an HR manager who gets fired hardly a year into the job. It says that the recruitment strategy is wrong and needs to be reviewed. And one of the ways to address this is to do a competency assessment of a person before they even get approved for the job. So that if they fail the competency test, which is not perfect, it's not a perfect instrument, but at least it tells you that this person could occupy this post. Or what? So that's with regards to resignation. The going forward, the organization has to do competency assessments for people that it recruits, especially for senior management level. The second thing I want to comment on is the relationship with the police. It needs some more work. Because for quite a long time now, we've been trying to instigate a protocol and a memorandum of understanding with the police. And they seem to be bogged down on really petty and unnecessary things. There are international experiences of how various organizations doing exactly the same kind of work relate with the police in their countries. Because at the end of the day, there is no country where the police are responsible for this work. The police come in when somebody must be arrested. Now, the police are saying to the FPB that it's not your responsibility to have a hotline. But there is no country where the police have such a hotline. And the police have no capacity to handle a hotline of this nature. And third, neither has the FPB said to the police that it now wants the power to arrest. All it does is to receive a complaint and refer it to the police and to the international network for investigation. So we are working on this. We are discussing with the police to try and arrive at a proper protocol that will govern the relations, the working relations with the FPB in regard to this work. Thirdly, on the issue of pornography, generally, I understand now that ETV may have been granted a license by ICASA to have a 24-hour porn channel. They say because it's a pay channel. Now, when we raise these things, we are called all sorts of names. I've been called a fundamentalist, and I thought of the His Excellency President George Bush, and I thought, I mean, surely, I can't be that fundamentalist. But we were called names. The problem is that the struggle against this thing, and people confuse the issues we are raising about pornography. Because we have not said banish pornography altogether in South Africa. We have just said that take it out of our living room. A person who wants, I mean, if you go to Europe, a person who wants to watch porn, they simply walk over to the red light district. Go to a porn shop, an adult shop, and watch it there. But the fact is that the people who are watching these programs are too ashamed of what they are doing. And now they want all of us to sit and have to choose. It's like when you buy a car and somebody and the car dealer comes to you and asks, "Sir, would you like to have brakes on your car? Would you like us to install the seatbelt? Do you think you would like to have the airbag?" And what you are saying is that let the airbag, the brakes, the seatbelt not be an option. They are compulsory. So that what you do when I buy a TV, you must not bring to me pornography without my permission, and then make it my responsibility to remove it. Let those who want to view, who want to speed driving, or who want to do racing, let them go to a racing course and do their racing there, so that if they hit each other and roll their cars, they do it, and we are safe, those of us who don't want to do racing. And that's the same thing we are saying with pornography. We have written a letter to the former Justice Mokgoro and asked her to advise us on the possibility of a total ban on pornography on the public media. Now, unfortunately, she resigned before they could, the Law Reform Commission, and before they could advise us. And we have requested, we have sent a reminder to the incoming chair of the Law Reform Commission, requesting them to advise us on this again. And we hope that they will give us proper advice so that we are able to take this up. But the more people speak up against this this thing, the better. And emphasize the point that we are not saying that people should not view pornography. In the first instance, pornography has not always been legal in South Africa. It was only legalized in 1994 or 1996. Only been recently legalized. Before then, it was not. So nobody can say that when you say take away pornography from the living room, leave it in the adult shops, that you are infringing anybody's right. You are just rearranging the lounge, basically. That's what you are doing. But the more voices come up against this on this matter, the better it will be, so that it's not religious people and those regarded as conservative and fundamentalist who talk about this matter. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, the CEO will allocate the questions, but just to say that as the FPB, you know, the honourable members will know that what we do is to implement the Act. The what is outside the Act is what we need the guidance of the parliamentarians and the to and lobby groups to be able to push the envelope such that we get to a value base that is acceptable to us. But I also need to raise an issue that we are now living in a global world. It does not matter how hard we try, we will be confronted with the new challenge of the global information highway that is upon us. Just an example of this 13-year-old child who was found in Yeovil really is as a result of this big city, and this network that you have on the cell phone. So the problems are huge. They really, that's why I really am very encouraged by Honorable Madasa that we should work together, because with civil society, that's what we're trying to get. With the limited resources that we have, we are trying to get as many organizations from the civil society to be our eyes and ears and be able to work with the police on matters of infringement of the law, especially with regard to protection of children. The 94, as the Honorable Deputy Minister said, before 94, this was called the Censor Board. And so people then said, never again. And I think what happened when we said never again, we opened the gate. And now I think the shock of what is confronting us is now leading us to regrouping and saying, what would we want for our society? Obviously, the Never Again group will say, don't censor, which is why there is now a way of looking at how do we do it better. And to say that in terms of broadcasting, the Broadcasting Complaints Commission is in existence, and the more people complain against the broadcasters, the better, because some of these things people watch on TV and broadcast, and that the print media has got the ombudsman who also listens to complaints, and the more people are encouraged to use the ombudsman to complain also, the better. And I just want to reiterate that the resignations that we have had, I know, because we tried so hard to keep the previous CEO, we tried hard, but we could never match what she was going to earn in a new job. It was not fair to say to her, in the public interest, stay when she was getting almost double what we were paying her. And we even struggled to revise the salary package of the current CEO because the Treasury is saying, when you look at your budget and you look at your salary structure, you are starting to be skewed already. So you have to keep your salaries at a particular level. The demand on our organization is big, so which is why we really are having a very difficult situation to try and keep staff. When it comes to disciplinaries and all those other things, I think that one we have already explained, but I'll ask the CEO to elaborate.
Sorry, if I may just comment on two other things. You know, the problem with the deficit, sure, they will explain how they have to try and contain it. But the reality is that the FPP's budget is very low for the work that it has to do. Because a lot of the work it does, and compare it also with international organizations that do the same work, is more about educating. And to educate the public, you need a massive budget. Last week we were in Brussels, met an organization called Child Focus. Of course, it's an NGO, but it has over 30 donors. And you're talking banks and all sorts of major organizations. And the FPB, on its meager budget, can't do the amount of educating the public that it needs to do, so that it actually gets to sink down in parents and educators and children what they need to do to protect themselves against the dangers of technology. Because on its own, technology has absolutely nothing wrong. But it's only an instrument. Anybody can use it for whatever people. So we've got to educate children. The budget is way too low. We've tried basically everything. And regularly in the past, we also relied on the department during the month of September diverting some funds to assist the FPP, but with the recession, there is no more money that we can get from the government. We've even tried to leverage with internet service providers, with Microsoft, with other organizations, but we are still trying to raise more money to be able to support the work that the FPP has to do. If you look at the number of children that were reached during the previous financial year's public awareness campaign, they are just a fraction of the children that must be reached for this campaign. The amount of media material that must be produced and brought into each household would probably cost almost the same as the annual budget of the FPP. And it has to try and do within the limits and pay staff and have enough compliance monitors, have enough examiners, enough management to deal with the challenges it has to deal with. One of the things that has distressed us in the past is that if you had a case like in Pietermaritzburg, where this couple were using their own children to produce child pornography, now, the case goes to court, they get sentenced. They appeal, they win the appeal. Because the judge came up with all sorts of flimsy reasons why. He obviously had not read the Films and Publications Act. But after that, the FPP can't appeal the case. The case must end there, unless the National Director for Public Prosecution says that I've got the money to appeal this. But the national director, this is not one of their priority cases. So these people are out scot-free, trading in DVDs where their own children are used in child pornography, and they probably are still going on doing the same thing, and there's nothing you can do about it. The problem is that once there is that precedent, then someone else another day will also be acquitted quoting the same precedent. And that's the challenge that we are facing, because the FPB, in addition to having a large budget for public education, must also have a big legal budget to be able to challenge certain things itself to protect children when nobody else is in a position to do that. Now, these are some of the financial budgetary challenges that it faces. The second thing I needed to comment on is the hotline. The telephone hotline was launched in 2005, December, and the internet hotline was launched in July 2008. When we were at the In Hope conference last week in Brussels, we were really applauded for this internet hotline, which is regarded as amongst the best, if not the best in the world, in terms of the infrastructure that has been put up there. And what InHope, the International Association of Internet Hotlines, would want to do is to work with the FPB to use the FPB as a beachhead into Africa. Because you are dealing here with two challenges related. One challenge is the proliferation of internet capability in South Africa, and mobile phone spread is making it easy for our children to access internet and therefore to be vulnerable to accessing, whether by mistake or otherwise, child porn sites, and therefore to view sites that they are not supposed to view, and therefore to be groomed, because this is what pedophiles do. They use internet pornography and exposure to pornography to groom children to accept that sex with an adult is okay, that violent sex with an adult is acceptable. And once they do that, they've got your child in a cage, and it's going to be difficult to get your child out of there. But on the other hand, the lack of regulation in our neighboring countries and the increase in human trafficking is making it, both within the region and internationally, is making all our children vulnerable. In Brussels, for example, which is a developed country, in Belgium, the number of children who just disappear without a trace is staggering. If you look at Southern Africa, the ministers of Home Affairs in Southern Africa have raised this problem of human trafficking, and in particular women and children, and the smuggling of children and unaccompanied minors who find themselves in different countries without their parents, their nationality not known. Those children are vulnerable to child porn exploitation, to sexual exploitation. Now, these are some of the challenges that this internet hotline is going to assist us with, both now and in present, and in future, as the challenge continues to increase at a rate faster than we can manage, because the reality is the technology cyber criminals are at work 48 hours a day, moving faster than we can move. They have more money than we have, and have absolutely no limitations. Unlike us, we are constrained by all sorts of regulations and laws. They don't have any regulations. Whatever international regulations exist internationally have to do with us, not to do with criminals. Criminals, we have only said you need to combat crime, to eradicate international crime. But criminals have no regulations among themselves. Whoever they can hurt, wherever they can get them, they will hurt that person in whatever way possible. And each time they get worse in the things that they do. I'm sure that the CEO and her team will then give the statistics of how much these hotlines have succeeded to do. But I think they were really applauded for the hotline, for the infrastructure and capacity that they've put up, and it's regarded as a model in the world. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask my colleagues to help with answers. I think we welcome, Chair, the comments regarding the performance bonuses. At least it gives us comfort that we are on the right track. There was a comment around the human child trafficking. We've picked up that there's quite a number of initiatives. Child trafficking is not necessarily our mandate, but a child pornography is not just about the images. It's about the sexual abuse of children. They get trafficked in order to be abused, and then that results in images sometimes. So that therefore gives us a responsibility to work with people involved in that arena. We've picked up a number of initiatives, especially focusing around 2010 and beyond 2010. We've had engagements with the NPA because they've got quite an organized initiatives around working on child trafficking. We've also discovered that at the SADC region, at the SADC level, there is a program of action and initiatives that SADC hopes to implement that are aimed at dealing with the matter of child trafficking itself. There is also a process handled internally in the country by the Department of Social Development, which does not necessarily look at child trafficking, but looks broadly at issues of protection of children around in the country, or rather intensifying the protection of children in the country during 2010. Because obviously there are concerns, there's been reports already that there's some grooming of children that's happening in certain communities. There's been a report released by NPA regarding some allegations of grooming on children, etc., which they've done investigations and to some extent confirmed that. So we are part of those engagements and participating in those different platforms. But I do think that Chair, that maybe one of the things, I think it was decided in fact in the last meeting when we presented to the committee, maybe one of the things that the committee needs to do is to look at the issue of our preparedness as a country from a point of view of child protection in relation to 2010 and bring together some of the relevant committees that could even invite the 2010 local organizing committee, because they do lots of work around security of the country, but they will tell you that what they are more concerned about is the soccer hooligans than any other thing else. So I think we need to bring together those people to come and share with the committee what plans are in place, social development and all these other people, just because the link is there, especially with human trafficking. The CFO's issue, I don't know if, I think SSE will speak in detail. What we have now, Jonas is the acting CFO. He is the finance manager. I'm not saying if he was. He is the finance manager, but he appointed him to act in the absence of a CFO. We are having interviews sometime in November, towards the end of the November for the CFO. Every time I have to sign a submission regarding appointment of people, I always worry whether we're appointing the right people, because in all fairness, you never know that you're appointing the right people. There are certain checks that we do, like the deputy minister has indicated, competence assessments for all managers, relative manager and CFO positions. CEO, because CFO and COO are executives. We do competence assessments. It's part of what we do. The board has also recommended that we do integrity checks, especially for those positions, but also for people in procurement, in finance, and in HR. We also do verification of qualifications, but sometimes the real competence of a person gets tested when they actually have to do the job. What complicates matters worse with the CFO positions in particular, and it may run across in all senior executive levels at the film and publication board, is the disparity in terms of the pay structure. What we pay for a CFO at FPB is far low compared to other CFOs in government And remember, the CFO scheme is a very scarce scheme in government in general. But also, if you compare with our own peers in regarding to the way that we do your regulatory entities, if you compare with ICASA, your MDDAs and other entities which more or less have the same responsibilities that we have, what we pay for the CFOs is not really competitive. And but it's a matter, I think, we will continuously engage with the board around to ensure that it's being resolved in the future. But for now, we have to do with what we have in terms of resources. So there's all these factors that, at the end, we're looking now at the shortlist that we have done already, because one of the things you require is experience. And already with the shortlist that you have, you can see that the real CFOs have the experience. Huge experience out there will not get attracted to work to come and work for the FTD because you can't afford them. So you have to work with what you have and develop that further. Stakeholder relations, I fully agree with the comments, but when you go into the ground to work with stakeholders, and I mean, I want to make an example about the law enforcement people. There's an MOU that has been outstanding for the past 2 years, which all it requires is simply being signed. At low level, people have worked on the MOU, but when it reached the time for signing, people don't want to sign it exactly because of some of the issues that were raised by the Deputy Minister. Now, we've almost said, let's change strategy. Let's not necessarily fight so much to have that MOU signed, but let's ensure that we work with these people, engage them in training, engage them in whatever that we need to do with them. And they respond very well, because the MOU is like signing that they are giving over their responsibilities to us, and they are not giving over responsibilities. I think generally law enforcement agencies, our experience is that they are very difficult at signing things. I'm just making an example. And we also work quite closely with NGOs, especially with the Child Protection Program. Even there, I mean, we, your NGOs like Childline, some of the cases that we get, we refer them to them, because some of the people we call in the call center about something that has nothing to do with what we do. So we also serve as a referral to refer to the right entity. But the COO, I don't know if she has the stats right now, but she can speak about the stats regarding the telephone call center. In terms of the publications, Honourable Member, I think it's the Advertising Standards Authority that deals with your big, with your adverts, with your outdoor adverts, and even indoor, if there's anything called an indoor advert. But it's the Advertising Standards Authority that deals with that. The amendments extend our role with regards to publications, to a number of publications, but not necessarily adverts. The M spoke on the issue of resignations, I think, and the board chair. I think the call center volume still, I would like you to attend to it. The management of the deficit, I would like the acting CFO to attend to it. I think the issue around access of children to porn is a debate that must continuously go on, and perhaps the debate that also Parliament must take a bigger interest on, because one of our biggest concerns is that with more and more soft pornography or erotica or whatever it's called being available in public platforms like your television and any other public platform, the challenge with that is that it contributes to grooming of children. There's a study that was presented by social workers who work for the Department of Education in Gauteng West around the grooming of children and the cases that they deal with on a day-to-day basis. From when kids get into a taxi, as a parent, you're thinking that they're going to school, and they get into the taxi, they have an arrangement with the taxi driver not to pay for the taxi fee, but to give certain favors to the taxi driver. I mean, they had real life experiences of children as young as 5, who, how they sit already, they look like they've been so thoroughly groomed, and perhaps the committee itself, we could invite those people, the people who presented the study to us, to even further share the information with the committee itself. But it's just disturbing information about what happens. And it's not like your high-level things about children standing in corners and being prostitutes or sex workers. It's just about how on a day-to-day basis the issue of grooming of children is integrated into their lives. They watch a film there, they see how adults behave when they're having sex, and then behaving an adult who's grooming them, that it's okay to do that. You know, you are sexy, you are a young girl, you are sexy, how you sit, and etc. So it's there, it's the reality, and it's not in any particular community. All communities are affected, because in that study, it's equally children of all races. who are reported as real life cases of people who the social workers are interacting with regarding the issue. So it is quite, we were sitting the other day with some colleagues, and then there was a guy who was who is a gay, and he is in a gay relationship, and he was, you know, he was just sharing information, but it struck us how issue of human trafficking takes place. He was just telling us stories about the trends that are happening in the gay community now, that they import people, they import partners from out of the country, and they are more interested in your, like, I think they said the hottest spot now is Zambia. So they go to Zambia to actually look for people, bring them to South Africa. Remember the poverty levels in those countries. Bring them to South Africa. And likelihood of them being young and naive is very high. Bring them here as their gay partners or whatever, and as a circle of the people, they will share them. And then when they're through with you, they don't care what happens to you. And I mean, he was just simply telling a story. But what we read out of that story was that the issue of human trafficking is a very, very serious issue. And it is linked to poverty. Because if you go to Zambia and promise a 16-year-old opportunities in South Africa, South Africa is seen as being in a better off position compared to Zambia. That 16-year-old is going to come, certainly to South Africa. You welcome them in your house, they stay with you, they become your partner. When you are through with them, when they start making demands, or you are through with them, they are starting to be clever, then you share them, you give them to another person, and another person, and another person. And at the end, they disappear in the system. So it's not, when we raise these issues, it's not about really creating a panic in society, but they happen in very little corners, and they are becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. The last issue, I think, the issue of underfunding, the Deputy Minister has raised the issue, but I do want to say that from where we are indeed confronted with lots of underfunding. Now we've developed a strategy for the next 5 years, but certainly we're going to have to, the strategy is ambitious, it's going to be expensive to implement. But on a yearly basis, we have to look at what we have and what we can implement using the resources that we have. We are going strongly, though, on partnership with state entities, because also if you look at the role of educating the public, it's not necessarily, or educating children in particular, targeting children, it's not necessarily a role that we have to do by directly going to schools to talk to children, because it is expensive. We've done outreach last year. For those 54,000 people that we have gone to speak to engage with, we have not spent less than 3 million in them, because outreach is quite expensive. We are looking at different mechanisms that we are going to use, especially reaching out to children, and the new media mechanism is one of those. Maybe exploring a partnership with people like Mixit, maybe having a bulk SMS program that you have in place where you can continually send the messages to young people themselves, having partnerships with the Department of Education where you are able to train life skill orientation teachers so that they can integrate some of these issues into their own curriculum, because they have day-to-day engagements with learners in school, which myself and you will not have, because the monitoring aspect of it becomes easier. Because if we just go to a school once for an hour and speak to them and come back home, we really don't know how that message was received. But if that is embedded in a curriculum in a school, it works better for the learners, it works better for us from a monitoring point of view. The issue of legal work, I mean, just to even take the matter further, one of the things that we do with classification is that if, for instance, we classify your movie, I want to make an example about District 9, because District 9, we classified it as 16 years, and there was an appeal against the age that we gave to District 9, at least we won the appeal. We won the appeal on the basis that we had to escalate the age rating of the film because there are likely issues around prejudice. And then a 16-year-old is a matured viewer who would understand that it's not necessarily prejudice that is being perpetuated in the film. It's just showing another side of life. Whereas if it was for a 13-year-old or a 12-year-old, the 12-year-old may, in terms of interpretation, take it as it is. Now, you have lots of cases. One of the cases that I know the COO's heart is still very sad about is XXY. XXY was categorized as an X-18 film that was supposed to go into adult show, No, 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 it was categorized as child pornography film, so it was not even supposed to go to the adult shelter, etc. But on appeal, the distributors of XXY won the appeal on the basis that it is an educational film, it's about intersex relationships, it's about a lot of things that are educational in its nature. And the film has been going on, it was shown in the gay and lesbian festival that has been taking place, I think, in October or in September. And we felt if we had money, we really felt that we would have taken the matter further to challenge the decision of the appeal board to allow the film to go through. But we didn't have the resources to be able to do that. So we simply had to sit and say, okay, but the film is out there. It is now, it is rated X18, so it's not available on public platforms. And we hope to some extent that manages the impact of the film itself. But again, we know if a parent hires it, buys it, or gets it from an adult shop and leaves it carelessly in the house, it also gives exposure to kids and other people in general. But I think my colleagues can answer the other questions.
The volume of the calls handled by the call center. The volume of the calls handled by the call center are on average 200 to 300 per quarter. Most of these are not necessarily related to child pornography. Sometimes it's the general public inquiring about FPB issues. Sometimes it's people who are lost trying to phone another helpline and then they phone the FPB. It's very, very a few calls that come relating to child pornography, mainly because child pornography is really a crime that people want to hide. So even if you are just an honest member of the public, like the DM mentioned, that the people who access pornography sometimes don't want to be seen to be accessing pornography. So chances are you will come across child pornography when you are on pornographic sites. So people then get worried that, you know, if they report, then they will be identified as people who are watching pornography and such things. And that's part of the reason why we really launched the internet hotline, because we were trying to say it's anonymous, you don't have to tell us who you are, just report this matter. The progress on the cases that have been referred to us, I think in the past year we received about 9 cases. Most of these, I would say about all of them were actually hosted outside of South Africa. So you find that it's really difficult. There's not much that we can do as a country to have those websites closed. All we do is we work with internet service providers to block them so that members of the public can't access them in South Africa, but we can't have them closed. So our relationship with the In Hope that the DM was referring to earlier on, will help us to take some action on these kinds of websites, because now we have a relationship with similar hotlines in other countries where we can report and say, we found a website, it's hosted in the US, can you do something about it? And then they're beginning to give us a feedback, obviously, on what action they've taken. It's not in all cases that they give us feedback, because these hotlines also have their own protocols. Some of them don't allow them to actually tell us what has happened. In some cases, we find that this is child pornography, only to find that they, according to their own legislation, don't define that as child pornography. So those are just some of the challenges that we have. I think there was another question. Okay. Or reasons for refusing registrations. These were mainly adult stores that did not comply with other laws, like some of them did not have 2H licenses, which are issued by municipalities. So as FPB, if you don't have a 2H license, we can't register.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. On the issue of the deficit, waste management, we have decided to cut operational costs, but especially on your travel, telephone, not providing catering, for instance, in meetings with your house inside, but basically to manage the deficit, we're going to reduce on operational costs. Not necessarily also as we reduce operational costs, we must also be aware that we mustn't that try to hamper delivery or what, but we are going to reduce operational costs. Thanks.
Thanks, Advocate Madad.
Yeah, just one point, Chairperson, thank you. To the Deputy Minister. I must encourage the Deputy Minister. I've listened to you in this campaign, and I think we need to encourage you and to work together with you, regardless of these labors that you get. Because I understand your work as part of building this new society, where vulnerable groups are specifically protected, so that this new society does not have vulnerable mm-hmm. groups. But the point that I really want to make is, I'm concerned about this thing you have revealed about ICASA, which then, for me, discloses some lack of coordination, and I'm not putting the blame on you. I'm just saying, I think the ministries also need to work together, even beyond the normal cluster classification, so that the police, the Ministry of Communication, they also come on board, and others that may be relevant here and there. So I think that issue also reveals that the other ministries probably are not collaborating as they should. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Madam. The challenge that we obviously have as a broad challenge is one of inadequate budget. You have your mandate, but because of the nature of your work, there will also be areas of unfunded related mandates. So we can't, in all honesty, promise that we'll be able to assist you in getting the requisite budget that you need. But we'll try and motivate to the best of our ability. So it's an ongoing challenge that we have, that we'll engage with you to try and see what we can do to assist. Good folks, you do important work, and the challenge that you have, obviously I could understand why you were reluctant to have your tea earlier, coming with the burden of having to explain a qualified audit for the first time. Last year you did not have this problem, so understood the challenge that you have to engage. As long as you have the requisite understanding that it's not a space that you'd like to be in again. So moving forward, we will continue to interact with you, and we'll also make it a point that we don't just see you once per year. The nature of your work implies and expects us to interact with you on an ongoing basis. There are areas at times that you can provide information. Members would gladly receive the information. If we can raise questions, motions, make Parliament aware of some of the issues, we'll do so. And it might even be necessary when we come back next year to organize a debate in regard to that issue specifically. Then we can share information with Parliament as a body, but also all the relevant role players. So I'm sure members would be interested in carrying the flag for you in that regard. So for now, I think we have said what could be said in the couple of hours that we have had thus far. We'd like to thank you, and we are always happy to see you. Earlier on, one of the gentlemen this side asked me, is this a fair reflection of the demographics in South Africa? 4 women to every man. I said, I'm not going to commit myself to it. But we are happy with what we see. Confirms that man is a dying species. Good folks, thank you very much. you are at liberty to leave us. We have the two admin issues that we spoke about earlier in regard to the Lesotho protocol. But before we relieve the good folks from the FPD, I would ask a member to propose that we accept the report and somebody to second the acceptance thereof. We've had the report, good folks. Advocate Matasa proposes, Honorable Balindela seconds. Thank you very much, good folks.
Associate Honorable Matasa, would you like to propose?
Ma'am, I would like to, but we are all constrained by this budget. We don't have the requisite, what goes with the champagne or something. You may consult with them in seeking to equalize that balance of income expenditure, male, female. Members, the agenda point that we have that refers to the RSA Lesotho agreement on the facilitation of movement of citizens. Ruben, the meeting continues going out outside. Thank you. I'm saying that there's the Lesotho agreement. The reason we have it in front of us today is not to discuss it. What happened in the previous parliament was this had been tabled, and subsequent to that, with the new parliament, when we came in, I perused the agreement and pointed out a number of issues to the department. Amongst others, if it had to go forward, it would mean that it makes provision for Lesotho nationals can come to South Africa. There's no specific reference to the need of getting passport or whatever travel document stamped at the Lesotho border. And it means that people would just show their Lesotho form of identification. And they would be able to be in the Republic for, I think, the maximum period of 6 months. How do you account for people who move freely into the country if you don't know the numbers? And how do you track their exit again after 6 months? So there were a number of material defects. So we are discussing this with the department to say that also in view of our visit to the port of entry. So we, as a portfolio committee, would need to have more time and information in regard to this, so that we can apply our minds and with the department produce an agreement or protocol that best serves the interests of South Africa and Lesotho. So the reason why it was tabled here today was that next week and the week thereafter, I think it's classified as committee weeks. So this would have been the only item that would have brought us back to Parliament. And I thought that it would not be the correct thing to do. Just to bring us back for 10 minutes to say that what I've just said now. So this is why I okayed it with the committee clerk, just to circulate it with the understanding that I would give this explanation. So this is how you find this in front of your members. Honorable Sarah Blanche.
I would just like to know the question.
I'd just like to raise a question. Are we going to have some, in other words, we're going to have another time when we discuss this and raise specific issues?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, because specifically you mentioned the city board of visits. What perturbs me greatly is the fact that people in the city don't have proper travel documentation. I mean, they've got an A4 paper like we saw, that with a stamp that they can manufacture at any place. And we've also seen recently on a TV program called Blanche that the city is one of the main and the freedom border, free state border, border posts are used mainly for human trafficking. So we're basically going to give those people doing those things carte blanche, to use the word, and a blank check. And we've got I've got a real issue with that. And I hope that we will be able to discuss it.
We did say that all of us are equally concerned about this matter. So let's be clear on that. All of us are concerned in regard to this matter. So this is why, as a portfolio committee, we did not let this go by us. Even if it's when it was dealt by the previous parliament. So we are asking that you get the department. The department is also having a real look at this. In that process, we'll also make adequate time for us to look at this protocol so that we can do the right thing in regard to this. So this is why it was stable. So in future, you will get adequate time to deal with this. So that takes care of the Lesotho protocol agreement as it is presently termed. The only other issue is that there are minutes of our previous portfolio committee meetings. I ran my eye over them and we circulated those minutes. So if members have looked at them and there's an issue that you'd like to raise, then we can do so. But I'm satisfied that it's a reflection of the previous meetings that we've had. There are a couple of minutes that would still be outstanding that I would have to go through, and the next time that we meet as a portfolio committee, we'd be in a position to table those meetings that are outstanding. So if there's any comment in regard to that, members, we do so. Otherwise, it just means signing off on those minutes. Honorable Palisa.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also did go through the minutes, and I thought they were really substantial. And I think, really, they were presenting what we also saw there. It's just that I did not, I wasn't sure, because we didn't say much about tourism or lack thereof projects. So I thought, okay, maybe we have deliberately said that issue will then be handled by the portfolio committee. Maybe that's why we didn't so much dwell on it. I don't know, Chair, but if I get the answer, really, I did not see anything that was there. Very much different from what we saw there. And I think they subscribe.
The person who cried, wait a minute.
Thank you very much. I must also just explain. The minutes that you are referring specifically is our minutes, like in our meetings. And then the draft report in regard to our tour of the border areas. That has been corrected and circulated to yourself. That one we are not adopting today, because you still need to have the opportunity to come back with input in regard to that. And then that should also, I presume, cover the aspect of tourism, where the portfolio committee that we went with indicated that there were not sufficient tourist activities, and with the attendant challenge that their department is a new one, so it would not be fully represented at all border posts. So the minutes that I'm referring to is not our draft report of the visits to the ports of entry, but just our regular portfolio committee minutes.
Honorable Masilo.
Chairperson, I'm happy with the minutes they sent. I just need to correct on page 6, my surname N is missing there.
Okay.
When the Lorong, the
last can give us the date of that.
The date is the 10th of June.
I didn't know that.
2009.
Mr. Blunt, is there anything you want to add?
Yes, just on the 11th of June, when the minister addressed us, I was present at that meeting. I think there were only three of us. But on this minute, it says that I have presented an apology. I was definitely present at that meeting. I remember we started the meeting off with you and myself and one other member.
It's fine, ma'am. So we'll correct that. Eddie, please note that.
And then just one other time, number three, I did send an apology because that day we went to Nyanga. So the date was the 4th of August. The 5th, Mazizola and myself was there, but on the 4th, we apologized because both of us went to Nyanga.
So I have a proposer, Ms. Balinder. Mrs. Balinda proposed the adoption of the minutes, and I had a seconder, Honorable Masilo.
Okay, I'm happy to second.
Thank you. So that deals with the minutes. Members, technically, unless some major thing happens, today seems to be our last meeting. But if we are called for anything, then we might have another meeting. But as the situation presently stands, we don't have any other formal meeting scheduled. I would like to thank all of you members for the dedication that you have shown and the responsibility that you have taken for the work that you do to raise all the issues that we need to raise without fear or favor. At times, members have argued, debated, but that's in line with properly doing the work that you are supposed to do. So I would like to assure you that I appreciate a vibrant portfolio committee of members, so all of your contributions are highly appreciated. And I also appreciate the fact that there are other members who've got this as their priority committee, but they serve, or others also serve on other portfolio committees, and others vice versa, we have a different priority committee. But whenever it is possible, they avail themselves here as alternates. So I'm merely saying that that is also greatly appreciated. I know there are at times other portfolio committees that are always out there on the street campaigning for members. I have not had that difficulty thus far. So I appreciate your contribution, and I don't take it for granted. Thank you very much. And I would like to wish you well in terms of the festive season. Do everything that you need to do. And most importantly, what we tend to neglect because of the weight of our responsibility at this place is to spend very little time with family. So do really enjoy the time that you spend with family. And we wish you well. Having said that about members, I would also like to say that we also appreciate the work that the staff do. Eddie, with the roster of differing assistants every day, and also the work that Adam has done as a committee researcher. He has looked at whoever comes to present. And when it has been possible, he has sent us information beforehand. When things were bad for him, he has distributed it on the day of the portfolio committee. But I would just like to say that we do also appreciate the work that you do, good folks. And then last but not least, stakeholders. There are always people who come and check on what we do, the right notes there. So you are always welcome, ma'am. I've also seen variations of your organization, men, women. So thank you very much for keeping a tab on us. We appreciate your participation. So good folks, thank you very much.
I have one comment, Chairperson. Thank you very
let
much.
Let me start with the ladies. Mrs. Treblanche, I'll start with you.
Chairperson, I also want to say thank you for your leadership. I must tell you that I was pleasantly surprised when, from the first meeting, I saw that you're going to be a very fair chairperson, giving everyone a fair chance to speak openly and freely. And that's something I really appreciate in a chairperson. And also the way you keep tabs on members. If they say they're going to raise two issues, if they raise five, you tell them, you know. You're very good with doing that. And I look forward to working with you the rest of the term. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much for the kind words, Mr. Blanche. Ma'am Palindrela.
It's now going to look like we discussed this before we came to the meeting. and yet we didn't. Chair, in the provinces, there's always a problem with the opposition parties and the, you know, the party of the majority. The main problem is that normally people do not know how they bring themselves together as one unity and unit when they discuss the issues of government. And I think if there is any attribute that I would definitely want to say as group member is that the influence of the way you've handled the portfolio committee has made us, even when we go home, we try to tell people how we have got to be united when we talk about the people of South Africa and when we talk about government. And that, I feel, it is something that has been so much directly and indirectly entrenched on us through your leadership. So I really would like to thank you very much as part of COVID.
Ma'am Balindrela, thank you very much. But just to say that, good folks, what we do is simply our work. We are all public representatives of South Africa. When we operate at this level, it's multi-party. You have the confidence of South African citizens. Nobody is doing your thing. So we are doing right by our citizens. There's a multi-party democracy in this country, enshrined in the Constitution, so it's our duty to carry out that. Advocate Matas.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd also like to add my voice on behalf of us as the ANC component here, as directed through sign language to me by the whip of this committee. So, as you know, sign language is a recognized language in Parliament, and we use it very effectively, and therefore I would like to thank you. And as you know, I'd also like to put something on the table. I thought you would make an announcement. This is the last meeting. Maybe there might be some remainders in the prizes, some kind of lunch. You know, we don't have bonuses in this place. The only bonuses we get is this kind of lunch. Sometimes bags. That's what we have here. Anyway, that's what it's like. Thank you very much, really, for your leadership.
Thank you very much. I would also like to thank the work of our portfolio committee. Mrs. Maunye, this is why at times when you see me called away, she has to chair. Thank you very much, ma'am, for working together. Good folks, over and above our portfolio committee, I do commit to one day trying to just get us together for a social.
That's very nice.
Thank you.
Where we
do it.
Yeah, just to meet as colleagues. We don't do that often here in Parliament. We should. Just business colleagues to be able to share a cup of tea or over lunch to say, how is the work going? Multi-party. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.